Jagged, by the way, says for Jack, I would choose Dan Castellaneta.
Don't mind if I do.
Welcome to Recotopia, a happy home for recommended movies, shows, and music from two people you can definitely trust. Trustability varies by region, no guarantees implied. Now, here are your hosts, Chris Atkinson and Jeremy Scott.
Let's go potty.
Okay.
Okay.
Holler.
Yeah, excited to see how this all goes. Hello, everybody out there in Twitch and YouTube land. Mm-hmm. Getting the streams on the YouTubes and the Twitchies at the same time. You know what I'd like to do, man? Two streams at the same time. This is Recotopia episode 30.
Dirty 30.
Hello, everybody. I'm Chris Atkinson.
I'm Jeremy Scott. I forgot my line.
Yep. And today's big recommend is The Worst Person in the World. Mm-hmm. Hello, everybody out there. It's cool seeing all these different, you have the Twitch and YouTube going back and forth, all these different people and so on and so forth. So happy that you guys are here and looking forward to seeing how this goes. So,
yeah.
Do you have any small recommends?
It's no big deal.
It's so small and light.
It's small, it's tiny, it's petite, it's wee.
I do. I come bearing two small recommends, perhaps. Mm. Like many this year, you saw Top Gun Maverick. Mm-hmm. Perhaps you enjoyed it like many people this year. Mm-hmm. Yep. Perhaps you helped it make more money than Avengers Infinity War.
Mm-hmm.
But back in 2014, the same director and star made a movie called Oblivion.
Yeah.
This is Joseph Kaczynski and Tom Cruise. Tom motherfucking Cruise.
Mm-hmm.
Oblivion is really stylish. It's a really slick near future sci-fi movie. I think it's set in like 2070 something. Earth has been ravaged by war with an alien species, and most of humanity has gone to live on Titan, which I think is a moon of Saturn, Jupiter. Who the fuck cares? Mm-hmm. And Tom Cruise and his partner,
is it Andrea Riseborough?
Andrea Riseborough, are basically stationed on Earth to take care and maintain these drones. And the drones are going about the Earth, killing off the remaining aliens who are called scavengers. And so it's literally Tom Cruise's job to go out every morning, look for broken drones, fix those things, dream about the past and the future, and then come back to the... They live on this super tall, it's really cool, super tall thing that goes way up into the clouds. And they have like this glass swimming pool. Like I said, it's stylish. Mm-hmm. So, I love Joseph Kaczynski's work. He did Tron Legacy. He did Oblivion. He did Only the Brave, which we recommended on a previous Recotopia episode. Top Gun Maverick. And then I have not seen Spiderhead on Netflix yet. But something tells me even if I don't love the movie, I'm going to love something about it because this guy brings it. so I don't want to say any more of the plot from there. But if, in case you haven't seen it, if it's been a long time, I would recommend going back because I think it really holds up. There's a really cool kind of high concept plot thread throughout. And if you liked Top Gun Maverick, check out what these two guys made 8 years before that.
Yeah, I think I have not seen this movie since we send it back in the day.
Oh, wow.
If we did send it, it's been 10 years. Who knows? I think we did send this, but I remember enjoying it. It's got a good concept and it's definitely fun in there. And man, Andrea Riseborough was in everything after this movie came out.
This also has Olga Kurylenko.
Yeah.
Morgan Freeman, Nikolai Coster-Waldau from Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
Anyway, two thumbs up from Jeremy is what I really enjoy. What do you have to small recommend?
So I think it was Aaron a couple months ago was talking about this Japanese movie called Beyond the Infinite 2 Minutes.
Oh, wow. Yes.
I watched this on Prime, and it's 1 hour and 10 minutes. Very breezy. Very fun. Blow your mind. Time distortion movie. I wouldn't call it travel necessarily, but the concept is very simple, basically, even though you're going to be a little confused. But you know what? Your confusion doesn't really matter to your enjoyment of the movie at all. There is a guy who works in a cafe, and he lives above the cafe. There is a TV on, a monitor on, when he gets into his room. And 2 minutes in the future, himself is talking on the monitor and saying, "Hey, this is me. This is you 2 minutes in the future. I'm here now down in the cafe. I'm talking to you. And this is kind of a thing. I didn't know if you knew that or not." And he's like, "You forgot your guitar pick, right?" And he's like, "Yeah." He's like, "It's under the rug." And he goes over to the rug and he finds the guitar pick underneath it and everything. And he's like, "Be sure to come down here and tell me the same thing so that we can keep this consistent," or whatever. So you see the guy walk down, and there's another monitor in the cafe, and he is in the past on there, man. And he's telling this guy the same thing you just saw. So there's a bit of a back and forth. Now, where it gets really interesting is when other people start noticing what's going on with the monitor. And it's not like you would add like an extra 30 or 40 minutes to this. This is not one of those things where people just like, "Oh, what kind of weird trick are you pulling? And oh, I don't believe this at all." Everybody is excited about the time TV and they want to do stuff with the time TV. So like everybody who keeps coming into the story is like, "Oh my God, this is awesome," or whatever. And like they start doing stuff and they start seeing themselves in the past and in the future and so forth. Finally, one of the buddies decides, "What if we bring the TV that shows us the stuff from the future down to the cafe and make it face the other TV that's facing the thing in the past? And then we can start having this thing where we can see 4 minutes into the future," and so on.
Oh, my goodness.
So the movie just keeps on going with this big thing, like over and over. And you see all this stuff that's going to happen and all the stuff that's already happened and all this other thing. So you're seeing this from the present, and everybody's like trying to figure out what they want to do with this newfound power and everything. And you find out that a lot of the people who are from the future, who are themselves, often lie to their past selves about what's going on. So it brings a lot of interesting wrinkles into the whole thing. This movie had a smile on my face all the way throughout. 1 hour and 10 minutes, so brisk, so like simple. This is something that I think that you would enjoy. I think you're going to watch this 500 times when you first see it.
All right. Now, this has been recommended to me by multiple people, multiple mm-hmm. times. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to have to bump it up the list of shame and get this thing freaking watched. Do you know where you watched it? Is it like Netflix or?
I saw it on Prime.
Prime, that's right. You said that. I'm sorry. Yeah. Yeah, that sounds wild. It sounds totally up my alley. And I'm going to have to watch it, especially since it's so short.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to make my second recommend.
Okay.
Not a movie. I did not know until this year, because you know how you can buy sports packages, like you can buy NFL Sunday Ticket and watch, as far as I understand, any NFL game that you want, unless it's like blacked out in your area, which is a scam. Mm-hmm. You can do this with most of the major sports. I have never done this with anything but hockey. But this year, my baseball team, the Orioles, are better than they should be, not mm-hmm. to say that they're great, but better than they should be. For the mm-hmm. first time in many years, I think it's been 8 years or so since they made any noise. And historically, we have an owner who has just tended to sell off the best players and make poor decisions. His son is running the team now, and it's, you know, remains to be seen how well he's going to do. But in all these years of suck, we've managed to accrue a bunch of really good minor league players in the draft, and we have one of the best farm systems in baseball. My parents are obsessed with the Orioles. They live in Florida. They go to spring training games. I hear talk about the Orioles all the time. And when I heard the chatter that, hey, they're good again this year, or they're watchable again this year, I thought, I got to watch them, but they're never on TV here. And then my buddy Jonathan Watkins, said, hey, did you know on MLB.TV, you can buy a team-specific package? You don't have to buy the whole package. Now, it's actually probably financially smarter to buy the whole package if you think you might at all watch any more games, because it's not that much more expensive. But I bought the Baltimore Orioles team-specific package, and I have seen part of or all of every game since. That's been like 2 months now. I've gone from casually looking and see how bad the Orioles are a few times a year to watching every single game this year and getting really wrapped up in it. And so if you have a favorite team, maybe not even baseball, but football or basketball, check and see if they don't have a team-specific package where you can. I mean, the only game that was blacked out for me was when they played the Cincinnati Reds. Thankfully, that was on another channel on regular cable anyway. But I don't think any other team they could possibly play would black out here. So it's just really worked out well for me and got me back into baseball. I really enjoy it. I thought I would let other people know, because I never knew that existed. So there you go.
Yeah, that's kind of a godsend, really. I mean, if you're, you know, if you don't want to spend for like all the baseball or whatever, I do that. I probably don't take advantage of being able to see all the baseball, but there are times that I'm like, I've got a couple of games I want to see at once or whatever. So like it's pretty awesome when that happens. By the way, we had a comment from Shireen or whatever. She says, good evening from the Netherlands, Chris and Jeremy. I'm honored to catch you guys live. And I don't know how many people we've got from like other countries watching us, but welcome to the podcast. Glad that you could make it. My next small recommend is on Netflix. It is called The Platform. This movie is a little fucked up. I want to make sure that you get what you're getting into is kind of a horror movie. There's some grossness. There's some things in this movie. But it was an intriguing premise. I had to watch this. It's this structure. It's a vertical like jail structure where there's a hole in the center and there's rooms that are, you can see from your room. Like at the beginning, the main character is on level 48 and he can see all the way up to this. It's like this infinite amount of rooms. There's this hole that's there and he can look down and it's like an infinite amount of holes. It seems like it just like keeps going and everything. And he is roomed with this older guy who's been there for quite some time. He knows what this place is all about and he has, you know, he knows how to survive and everything. Every once in a while, this platform comes down through the hole and it has food for them. But the problem is it's a platform that has been through other levels before it gets to yours. So all these other prisoners have taken their fill of whatever's on the table and it goes down. So by the time it gets to level 48, there's not much left that you kind of really want to pick at in there. His roommate's immediately on it though. He's like, oh, you gotta eat this, man. This is good. You might get sent to, and apparently every month you get sent to another level. So like if you get sent to 135, then you're going to be at a level that gets almost nothing when you get there. So he's like, 48 is kind of a good level to be at if you're really to be honest and everything. So this platform is delivering them food that is obviously like nearly picked clean, and you can't like ask anybody above you to not eat the food or to ration or anything. Everybody's in it for themselves. There's a kind of a, you know, there's definitely a metaphor for like actual life hierarchy type stuff in this movie. because the people who are above do generally think of themselves as above you in every single way in this jail or whatever. So we go through this. Guy's finally like, okay, I better start eating some things, even though I don't really want to or whatever. And then one day, a dead body falls down to their level. And they're like, what the hell is this? And one of his roommates like, yeah, whatever, you, that happens every once in a while or whatever. And following that, the platform comes down and there's this woman on the platform. And we find out that she's looking for her son. And the main guy is like, they put kids in this place? And he's like, no, they don't put kids in this place or whatever. It's like, but he's just kind of like, eh, whatever. It's no big deal. It gets to the point where this guy's like, I really want to do something about what's going on in here. And I want to, and so he's trying to figure out how he can make this place better for everybody. And everybody's got their own thing. Like some people think you should be able to, convince others not to eat so much. Cause apparently if everybody took their fair portion, then everybody all the way down to the lowest level would be able to get food. But nobody ever does that. And nobody can talk to each other. Then there's the other thing, which is like, well, maybe we'll have to do some other things to try to get this. It's a fun puzzle basically of what they're trying to figure out here. And, it's a very interesting movie. Like I said, there is some stuff in there that's going to make you recoil a little bit. I don't think it's the grossest movie ever made by any means. but there are some gross things in it and everything, but an interesting premise and something that I think some of you out there would enjoy. So The Platform came out in 2019, I believe 2019. So yeah, it's on Netflix.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. It does sort of, I saw somebody mention it sounds like Cube, kind of. With Escape Plan. I think the comments are coming fast and furious for it's hard for me to keep up.
Yeah.
That sounds very intriguing. All right.
There is kind of some Cube to it. Escape Plan for sure. But it, you know, the only difference between this and Cube is that there's not really like, it's not like each room is something different or anything. It's all the same room. Mm. So there's not anything different about any particular room, except for the fact of how low you are or how high you are. You're going to be able to get the best stuff the higher you're up. So anyway,
I guess it's time for the big recommend.
The big recommend.
I'm fine. It's just that you're so big.
It's so huge.
It's a good rule, but this is bigger than rules.
It's bigger on the inside.
Is it?
I noticed.
I'm very interested to know what you think about this movie, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot of times you tell me and then I know before we go on. I don't know. I don't know about this one. The Worst Person in the World. It came out last year. It's from Norway.
Mm-hmm.
Let me make sure that I get my stuff up here because
are you gonna say names?
Yeah, because I'm gonna say names and I don't want to. I actually looked up. I mean, I looked an interview up so I could make sure. The main star is Renata Reinsvay, who plays Julie in this movie. And it's about her and like how a lot of, you know, it's funny. She starts off by saying that it's hard to figure out what to focus on. She wants to be a doctor at the beginning, but there's all this other stuff to worry about. There's world hunger and there's war and there's famine and all this other stuff going on. And like, how can I focus on this one thing? And it's like, yeah, this is sort of the day and age we live in, but I, you know, it's funny. I felt like I lived in this age before the age of smartphones too.
Mm.
I felt very connected to this character in so many ways because this person doesn't know what they want to do. And everybody else around her seems to know exactly what they want. Mm. And it's frustrating when you are this kind of person who has a lot of different interests and a lot of different things that go on in your world that you know that people are so sure about what they want And then they get frustrated at you for not knowing what exactly you want. And at the very beginning of this, she changes her major several times. She's like a doctor. She's a photographer. She's a psychiatrist, all these different things. And then she ends up working at a bookstore. You see her dating life. She starts dating this guy and this guy and this guy, whatever. Everybody's got their own function or whatever. And, you know, there's even a scene early on. She's probably not even been out with this guy for a week or whatever. And she's already talking to some other dude. Yeah. And that guy in the bar or the party or whatever is already looking down like, oh, she's already gone to somebody else. And it's just, you know, stuff that happens. And this somebody else is a former comic book writer who's done some sort of like a Bobcat comic book of some sort. His name is Axel, played by, now I think it's Anders Danielson Lee, but I didn't look up this guy's interviews or anything like that. He's not doing that anymore. I think he's pretty much, he doesn't really have any, he's living off his money from that comic book. I don't think he's doing anything really.
No, I don't think so.
But early on, you see that, you know, at first, they have this nice relationship and you think, oh, maybe it's just sex and whatever. And he says something like, I'm much older than you. I don't think you're going to hold that against me later. I've been in a lot of relationships. I know this is how it's going to end or whatever. And she's like, yeah, whatever. And she walks out and then she's like, oh, I kind of am in love with this guy. And then she comes back and he's glad that she's come back and they start this long relationship. Somewhere in there, he takes her to a sort of a retreat where his family is, and his family has, they all have kids and everything. And the discussion about whether they should have kids or not comes up. And he is, again, it's another one of those decision points where he is so sure that he wants to have kids and she's not sure at all. And he blasts her for not knowing whether or not she wants kids. And she's just about to turn 30. And there's this idea that like, oh, you need to know exactly what you want at age 30 or else, you know, you're not living your perfect life or whatever. So there's a big argument about this. And I just, again, I connect so well to a character like this because that feels like me a lot, in this type of stuff, because everybody around me seemed to know exactly what they wanted. They got their job, they got married, they had kids, all this stuff. This is stuff that they wanted. And I was always like, I don't know if I'm, if I really like any of that type of stuff at all. And it's hard for people who have those type of things to relate to someone who just doesn't know. It's not too long before she kind of gets in a complacency mode with him and meets this guy when she crashes a party. This guy, I don't think I ever heard the name correctly. It's Ivand or Evand or something like that. Mm. She meets him and it's a really interesting section because it's called cheating and they do everything except what you would call cheating, except it's clearly cheating
and kind of gross
and kind of gross at the same time. Yeah. But it's interesting. There's so many things where they're like kind of pretending like, is this cheating? And they're like, and he's like, no, that's not cheating. There's like, they think they're doing this like kind of like toeing the line type stuff, all this thing. And then they part ways after the night. They haven't had sex, but they've clearly had a connection and real intimate moments together. And she sort of forgets about it, but then he shows up with his girlfriend at the bookstore and they're looking for some sort of yoga book or something like that. And he fakes like he left his sunglasses when he walks out with his girlfriend. And he comes back and talks to Julie and says, hey, you know, I'm over by this barcode thing. I don't know what that is.
My impression was it's something the locals call a building that looks like a barcode or mm-hmm. like a multi use structure. That was the impression I got with the contact clues, but that was clearly some kind of an inside knowledge thing for Norwegians.
Yeah. Yeah. It's obviously not too long before she finally says to Axel, we have to end this. And it is one of the most heartbreaking, yet it's not one of those same kind of breakup arguments that you see in movies where it's, there's no yelling really. There's no accusing all that much. It's just that she doesn't know. She definitely doesn't feel like she should be in this relationship anymore. She can't explain why. She doesn't know what to tell him. Yes, she's met somebody else, but you know that this has been building up before she met somebody else. And she doesn't know how to put it in words. And it's very frustrating to someone who's on the other side of it, getting broken up with, to not have a real reason, because they're trying to come up. He's trying to ask her to come up with reasons why she's doing it. And she's like, there's no reason, basically. It's just done. It's over. I don't feel it anymore. I still love you in the way that I care that what happens to you and whatever, but I don't want to be in a relationship anymore. It's really hard to explain that to somebody a lot of times. And there is a point where I think she's looking for, maybe this will satisfy, if I can just say that he's this or that or whatever. And it's just not, it doesn't come off as true as just, I just don't want to be in this anymore. But she jumps right into this other relationship.
She does.
Right after. And it's not too long into that one where he finds an article that she wrote while she was with Axel. This Ivan guy finds it and is, where, you know, in the first, when she shows this article to Axel early on, Axel's just kind of given the, oh, this is good, you know, and it's just, it's not true. Ivan gives her, finds it, and is like genuinely in love with this article and everything. And she reacts completely differently than you would think. She doesn't like the fact that he's read this article. It could be a number of reasons why. It could be because that was a part of her in the past. She doesn't want to celebrate anything from the past. She's a different person now, whatever, all these type of things. And so even that relationship, which seems so beautiful at first, burns out pretty quickly and everything. So there's a lot of like really heavy stuff in this. It gets heavier and heavier as it goes along. I had forgotten how heavy it got, but there is a really beautiful middle section of this when she's about to break up with Axel, where the whole world stops.
Yeah.
And she runs through Oslo, and like everybody's just kind of like in mid position of doing something or whatever. She runs into Ivan and them have this long like evening where they're just kind of kissing here and there, they're talking, whatever, they sit on a bench, the whole day goes by, the sun comes up, and then she comes back and everybody's still suspended in motion, including a really funny moment where she sees two people kissing on a stairway and she grabs the woman's hand and puts it on the guy's butt and then walks off and then comes back to do that breakup. But what did you think about this movie?
I liked it a lot. Love how the thing I love about this movie is also the thing that I think keeps me from loving the movie, which is how unconventional it is. Like you mentioned, the tone getting darker and more serious as it goes in the first 20 or 30 minutes. I would call this a comedy. Mm-hmm. And it veers hard into drama by the end. And that's kind of a gradual turn. And I feel like it's on purpose. Mm-hmm. And so that makes me want to praise the film. But emotionally, while I was watching it, it was hard for me to connect to those tonal shifts. Now, that actress is incredible. She's mm-hmm. so charming. Mm-hmm. This is one of those star-making turns where, I mean, she sells the movie. She's why the movie works at all. Mm-hmm. And I wrote down that she's like a mix between Emily Mortimer with a dash of Dakota Johnson and that girl from the movie with the dresses, the stitching, Daniel Day-Lewis is a dickhead with asparagus.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. I can't remember her name, unfortunately.
But I got a vibe of kind of bits of each of those three people from her, but she's easy to watch. She's in almost every scene. And there's like, even like this one shot after she leaves that party where she doesn't let dude, say her name. I think maybe it's before she goes to that party. There's like a one shot of her walking down a sidewalk down a long street with like Oslo in the background. And she's kind of like half crying. She just really grips you and pulls you in. I loved the time paused scene, where, you know, they're the only two for whom time has not stopped. I love as soon as she flips that light switch, not only does time stop, but the world gets brighter. Like the colors pop more during that day. And when she goes back to do the breakup, switches the switch off, they get dull again. Little visual touches like that. There's a lot of artistry at work here, but this is a kind of movie I think I need to watch a few times before I decide if I love it or not. I don't know if that makes complete sense. There's one weird thing I want to mention that it's not necessarily my place to mention as a man, but she has a miscarriage towards the end of this film that feels really glossed over, which is to say the people that I have known who have had miscarriages, even if they weren't sure they wanted to keep the baby, those are traumatic events. And it just kind of cuts from that to the future. And she's a photographer. She's on set doing a job. And so I was left wondering, like, the movie jumps time a bunch of different, it takes place over like 4 years. So I'm sure they made the jumps they wanted to make. But I felt like seeing so much of her emotional journey, especially with related to, do I want kids? Oh shit, I don't. Oh shit, I'm pregnant. It felt like, and maybe that's something that just got cut for time or something, but it felt like there could be more to deal with from that event than just, well, she doesn't have to worry about that anymore.
I think that's exactly what they're saying in this movie, by the way. Oh, well, don't have to worry about that anymore. Because when she has that spotting in the shower and everything, and then she's told that the baby didn't survive, there's a sort of a look to, I don't know, if, I can't remember if it's the fourth wall break or whatever, but there's a smile that creeps across her face, like, I don't have to worry about this anymore. And then it does cut abruptly to her next whatever she's doing. She's doing photography for a movie shoot. And I really do think that's sort of what it is. It's the end of that chapter in her life. She's starting the new chapter. And yeah, they could spend, I guess, some time on her just kind of being like, I'm totally okay with this or whatever. But I think that's what the movie is saying.
It felt like one of the major themes. So for me, I just felt like they were going to incorporate that more. I did think the breakup was devastating. But with both of her major relationships in this movie, she doesn't tell them something important until it's too late. She doesn't tell him any of how she's feeling until she's breaking up with him, to the point where he thinks she's having a manic episode. He thinks she's like having a psychotic break because he doesn't understand why she's saying any of this.
Yeah.
And then she doesn't tell the second boyfriend that she's pregnant until way too late. And that's ultimately, I think, the trigger point for them breaking up. And that guy didn't want kids. They break up. And then when she sees him at the end, he's got a kid.
Yeah. Well, things change.
The movie has a lot to say about, actually, I think the movie's ultimate message is that life is messy and it's not easy to figure out who you are. And that is a perfectly valid message. I love that it didn't wrap up in a neat bow. I love that it didn't have anyone running back into anyone's arms at the end, like a cheesy romantic comedy America would make. I think we need to talk about that mushroom trip a little bit.
I was about to say, if there was anything else that we needed to talk about, it's the mushroom trip, which
it's a bad trip.
is both beautiful and messy all at the same time. Like, just it's kind of like Wolf of Wall Streetian, like, because it's these old mushrooms, right? They found this stuff.
Yeah.
They eat it. They don't think they don't think it's working. The guy is about to drive home by himself, and then he suddenly drops his keys, and then suddenly everything just starts getting really wonky. To Julie's perspective throughout this whole thing, which is, you know, a whole ball of just messy energy. She's thinking of herself as this like older, bigger woman. I don't know what that's all about, but like, that's what she's feeling like in the time.
Yeah.
There's a moment where she sees her dad, and there's the whole thing with her dad. She's got dad issues for sure. Yeah. Dad left her a long time ago, obviously, for another family. And it fucked her up a long time ago. And then I think now she's just kind of accepted it, even though it's still a pain that there, but yeah. Mm. She sees her dad, and there's a whole thing pulling out a tampon and all this other stuff in front of him, and there's wiping. Just a lot of craziness.
Okay, so, but then here's what I both love and hate about this scene is that it cuts to the next morning, and boyfriend's bringing in coffee, but she actually has blood on her face.
Yeah.
And I'm like, she did that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, her dad wasn't there.
No.
But she did that. And it's like never discussed again, except he says, well, we won't be doing that anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, I actually wrote, don't do mushrooms, kids.
Yeah. But it's got a lot of like, you know, it's got some of that Get Out feel to it too. And like, you know, just the way stuff is shot, because there's a one point where she falls to the ground or whatever. And Ivan seems like really, really far up above her. Like, you know, she's like sunk down, and then he's all the way up here. And a lot of like, it's one of those that's not, you know, it's kind of crazy for sure. There's no doubt. It's one of the craziest drug scenes I've seen.
I was not expecting it. And I love
also go ahead.
Fast she grabs the bag. When somebody says, oh, these are magic mushrooms, she just grabs it and scoots it back over to the couch. Like she's all in immediately.
Yeah. There's another interesting thing in this too, and I'm wondering what you know, the director is Joachim Trier, I believe. Yeah, Joachim Trier. There's an interesting scene with Axel on a like a morning television show or podcast or something like that, where the women on the podcast call him out for the sexist stuff that is in his comics. And he is in turn saying, you know, I think art should be messy, and I think that art should, I should be able to say whatever is in my dark thoughts that I would never do in art and everything. And they come back like it's two different, these are people having two different conversations.
Oh yeah.
Back and forth. And I think it's interesting. I don't think he's siding one way or the other with any of these people, but they're both right and wrong about a lot of things. And it's kind of just, there's all this like big, like crossfire. Like nobody is actually discussing, nobody's meeting anybody halfway in that.
Wasn't that, I felt like that was just a pretty clear, like thematically, I felt like that was just, not specifically about anyone, but it feels like the last 4 or 5 years of at least American pop culture debate has been about, you know, well, comedians are supposed to offend. And if I'm not allowed to offend you, then I'm not being funny. And
right.
It felt like it was kind of speaking to that mindset. He even says, if this right here was a comedy sketch, I would call you a whore. Mm-hmm. And she's gobsmacked that he just did that. Because like you said, she didn't hear if this was a comedy sketch. She just heard whore. And his point was lost, but he's not listening to them at all. He's just drawing a total line. I thought that was a very interesting scene. It's there's a lot of coincidences in this movie. The fact that she happens to see this while she's working out, I felt was a little coincidental. But I think it's on purpose, because at the end, she's taking pictures of the lead actress in this movie or TV show. That actress gets up and walks outside, and it's her old boyfriend that she's with.
Yeah,
so I feel like the movie is sort of saying some of these coincidences happen in life all around us anyway. Mm-hmm. But I did write down how small is Oslo?
Yeah.
Because anyway.
Well, and in the interview that I saw Renata Reinsvay in, which was a Seth Meyers thing, she said something to the effect that if you close down one road in Oslo, you're shutting down half the whole city or something like that. So, you know, it's one of those type of things. What was the other thing? Oh yeah. And then, yeah, of course there's a whole big heavy thing at the end too, with Axel, having cancer and, you know, sort of a closure moment for both of them as they talk about all the different things that, you know, I had a heart, you know, that's one of those just heartbreaking, moments. 'Cause he's sure that she was the love of his life, and she was. He's been in enough relationships to know which was real or not, and that she didn't end up feeling the same way is, you know, is one of those things, you know, that he's dealt with over the years, but he's glad that he got, you know, the time that he did. And I love this movie. I know that there's some parts of it that are hard to digest, but watching it the second time, I think I liked it more than I liked it the first time.
And I will very likely feel the same way when I watch it a second time as well. And I certainly don't want to give the impression that I did not like it. I really, really did. This movie is super inventive. There's a lot of really new stuff in it.
Yeah. There's a couple of comments I wanted to get to. The actress we were trying to think of from Phantom Thread was Vicky Krapes.
Thank you.
What was this one? Okay. Zalius says this movie is weird because I don't think it's bad. Everything is obviously very purposeful. The actors are good, and I still couldn't connect to most of it. It really feels like one of these movies where I was just not the target audience in any way. And that totally makes sense because the character being played is very specific. Doesn't really have a goal in mind. Doesn't have anything that she wants in life. There's no end game to this movie. So that's what I think can be a little frustrating when you watch it, is you're like, what does this person want? She doesn't know either. Ashella 12, I think, life somehow brings you to weird places where you once said you'd never be. I really like this movie for that and for not making huge drama out of things that can be handled differently. Now I want to watch it again. It's one of those. It's going to be a tough movie. I didn't remember how very hard into drama it leaned later on in the movie and everything, especially right after the frozen time scene. I didn't realize that. I'd forgotten that and everything. But I'm glad that you at least somewhat liked it, if not like more than somewhat liked it. And that it wasn't a total like, oh my God, I just can't.
No, not at all. In fact, there's a moment that I think sums up the movie really well for me when she's breaking up with dude. And there's kind of a stranger than fiction narrator through most of this movie that kind of explains her thoughts in humorous ways. And she says to him, I love you, but I don't love you. And the narrator says she felt in that moment that she had most, that was the most accurate statement she'd ever said in her life, or something like that. And it just encapsulates her and how she felt about everything. I really liked it. I just, I need to see it again to let the things that were surprising and jarring to me melt away and let me just follow her journey some more. But yeah. It's really good.
All right. It's time for the super secret double feature for this movie.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Shh. Be very, very quiet.
Secret? What secret?
Our dirty little secret.
I tell you something I've never told anyone.
I thought long and hard about doing Forgetting Sarah Marshall, solely because the main character has a breakup with the big relationship, finds a new relationship, but then that one is broken up and they don't end up with anybody. Mm-hmm. But the tone and the content of these movies are wildly different, and I don't think they would mesh very well.
Mm-hmm.
For the same reason, I thought about La La Land, because they don't end up together mm-hmm. at the end. And I can appreciate a dramedy that doesn't take the easy out. but I'm going to end up going with Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I feel like these movies feel very similar. They're both about exploring who you are, what you want out of a relationship. They both have a relationship that is both strong and not terribly healthy.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of, I think both movies are saying some of the same things about love and relationships and life. And I just think mood-wise, they would go pretty well hand-in-hand, the American counterpart. Exploring yeah. why do we love each other? Why do we fall out of love? What do we want in life? Anyway, so that's my pick for the super secret double feature.
Eternal Sunshine is an excellent choice. In the chat, Slab says my way too obvious double feature would be Amelie, which is another one that I thought of during mm-hmm. this whole thing. Though Amelie is also maybe has that same tonal incongruence, because that's, you know, quirky, the whole thing. But I did think of Amelie while watching
I did
it.
Too.
And That's Not My Name says 500 Days of Summer is also too basic, but it also works because it's got the same kind of yep. Issues in that. The one that I thought of throughout was High Fidelity.
Thought of that one too.
Yeah, because that's a whole thing where John Cusack really loves getting into these new relationships with people, and then he hates getting into the whole, like, having to actually be in a relationship afterwards. And so he's got a lot of love them and leave them on his resume there, so to speak. So anyway, all right. Well, what is our next week's homework?
All right. Next week's homework. I have been, as I told you at the outset of the show, in a baseball state of mind, watching my favorite team play every day. Mm-hmm. So next week we are going to watch and discuss 1988's Eight Men Out.
Oh, nice.
This is a story about the 1919 White Sox.
Yep.
They are considered still statistically one of the best teams ever put on the field. And then they took money from shady people to throw the World Series and got several of them banned from baseball for life, including the famous Shoeless Joe Jackson.
Mm-hmm.
This movie has everyone. John Mahoney, the dad from Frasier, Christopher Lloyd, David Strathairn, Charlie Sheen, John Cusack. This is directed by John Sayles,
which will be our second John Sayles movie.
Yep,
who made Lone Star. Made Lone Star, yeah.
And this movie is on Tubi for free, I assume, with ads. It's on Amazon Prime if you have a regular subscription, which is probably the way most of you will watch it. It's also on, I got this. Is Pluto a thing?
Yeah, Pluto's
a service
a thing.
Called Pluto? I'm blind.
Pluto's a thing. I don't have Pluto, but it's a thing.
Pluto. It's also on Pluto, or you can rent it at any of the usual places. I love this movie. I think it's a fascinating, real historical event, and this is a really solid look at it from kind of all angles. Mm-hmm. And I hope you guys enjoy it, and I can't wait to talk some baseball.
Yeah, and this this is an out of context thing, but Michael Rooker saying, "You never had to play for Charlie Comiskey." That's the part that I can't wait to get to in this one. I haven't seen this in forever. Michael Rooker, man.
Michael Rooker.
The guy just knocks it out of the park every time. We have some questions.
Yeah, I do believe we have some time for some questions.
Question.
I got something to say.
I want the truth.
I am listening.
What, in your opinion, are the best movies or shows that have an absurdly thin premise?
Okay. Lost in Translation is one of them. I've said this before. This is not a movie I typically like. And a type of movie that I typically like, but for some reason, Sofia Coppola like really puts you in sort of a dreamlike state while you're watching this thing. And Scarlett Johansson and Bill Murray are so good at it. So Lost in Translation would be there. I also, and maybe this isn't, I don't know if this is considered a thin premise, but Small Soldiers is another one that it's toys at a toy company turn evil. They get a chip that's an actual military war chip that turns them into sentient toys. And they want to actually do war on people. And that's this whole premise of the movie, is that they're warring this neighborhood when they get sent, when kids get them for Christmas. And
I do like that movie though.
Yeah, I do too.
Bradley Whitford's in that movie.
Yeah. Kirsten Dunst was like, I don't know, 14 or 15.
She's
in it.
Really young in that movie.
Yeah. Tommy Lee Jones does a voice.
Yep.
There's a lot of soldiers.
I'm going to go with My Dinner with Andre.
Yeah. That's just two dudes having a conversation.
Two dudes talking over dinner. Mm-hmm. That is both a very thin premise and a completely watchable movie. I also wrote down Clerks.
Because,
you know, the title of the movie is basically the synopsis of the plot. Mm-hmm.
He wasn't even supposed to be here today.
What's that?
He wasn't even supposed to be there.
He wasn't even supposed to be here today. Mm-hmm. All right, let's do another one. I would like to see a recasting of The Shining.
Ah. That's
not a question. what do you say, Chris?
I have as Jack Leonardo DiCaprio.
Ooh, he would kill it.
I have Wendy as Mia Goff.
Ooh, nice.
Dick Halloran as Courtney B. Vance. And Danny, I mean, you're gonna cast whoever's a kid at the time that you cast it. I don't know of any like 7 or 8 year old kids right now. Like the guy who popped into my head is the dude from The Black Phone. But he's like 15. He's 15 years old. I don't know if he could pull off Danny.
He's too old. Yeah.
So I don't know who's killing it as a 7 or 8 year old right now. But you know, whoever's like being cranked through the system, you put that guy's name.
Yeah, I wrote down some kid. So same philosophy. Yeah. Speaking of The Black Phone, which I recently watched, for Nicholson's character, I'm going with Jeremy Davies.
Okay. Yeah. He would be able to do that.
Ever seen play a normal person? Like, he's almost always a little bit nuts in one way or another. Mm-hmm. For the wife, I put Aubrey Plaza, just because I'm going to put Aubrey Plaza in everything.
Yeah.
And then I'm calling on Candyman Tony Todd to come in, fill out that final main role. And that would be my Shining. And some kid to play Danny.
Yeah, and Shireen's like, how about the actor who played Georgie from It? He looks rather young still, no, but he's probably like, I don't know, he's probably like 30 now.
He's probably had a growth spurt. They kids freaking do
like
that.
Like every time like you're like, "Oh, that kid from Insidious." No, he's like 35. You didn't realize that, but he's 35 now. That kid from Insidious.
Slap says his kid wants to watch The Shining, and he's like, that's probably wise there, Slap. And I mean, I don't know what age we're talking about here, but I would go into the mid to high teens before we get into that movie.
Yeah,
and that's only if they can handle that kind of stuff. It gets a little
freaky.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right, let's do one more, and then we'll throw it to our producer to play us out.
Jagged, by the way, says, for Jack, I would choose Dan Castellaneta.
Don't mind if I do. go crazy. All right. People like to debate what is or isn't a baseball movie or what is or isn't a sports movie. Give me a movie that has a ton of sports in it that you think isn't a sports movie.
Okay, so I could take this two ways. One is we consider it a sports movie, or it's advertised as a sports movie, but it's really not that much sports. Mm. Or it's got lots of sports in it. We don't consider it a sports movie, but it's got lots of sports in it. So one of them was Uncut Gems, was a thought on this one, because Adam Sandler is constantly betting on sports, and it's a so big part of the movie's plot, actually, that he's betting on sports. And then as far as movies that are, you know, they are sports movies but don't really have much sports in them, the original Rocky is one of them. And ironically, or coincidentally, I think it's coincidentally, I put Eight Men Out down on this one as well.
That's awesome.
Because Eight Men Out is, yes, it's about the White Sox in 1919. There's not that much baseball in it. There's a lot of, like, all the stuff going on behind the scenes of the baseball that's going on in Eight Men Out. So
interesting. All of you saying Moneyball in the chat are wrong. Moneyball is a sports movie. It's a baseball movie. This is my.
I don't know. I can see what they're saying, though. There's a section where they're doing the winning streak, and it's more sports at that point. But everything else around it, I think, is kind of.
This is a hot dog sandwich debate.
Right.
Just a little bit of fun.
Sure.
I went with Two for the Money. You ever see this with Matt McConaughey?
It came out, I don't remember much about it.
It's about sports betting. Matthew McConaughey is this wunderkind who comes out of obscurity and picks a bunch of games right in a row and becomes the top picker at Al Pacino's sports book. And Rene Russo's in this movie, and Jeremy Piven's in this movie. It's terrible. I've watched it twice. I don't know why. But they talk about football constantly. They talk about the spreads. They talk about college football teams. They're often a TV screen in the room with a game being watched because they're trying to see if his pick is going to win or not. But this movie is all about the gambling and nothing about the sports in terms of what it's really trying to say. So that was my answer for that one. The I also chat. Wrote down maybe Big Fan.
Oh, Big Fan for sure, because Patton Oswalt's just talking about the next season, and
yeah,
there's no sports really, but it is about him, you know, trying to ensure that the Giants are going to be supreme or
by any means necessary.
The chat, Josh says The Natural. I actually thought about that for a bit. Yes and no. Yeah, like it's one of those where there's a lot of baseball in it, and it drives that movie a lot, but there's so much not baseball about it too. So I totally agree with that. Justin says Fever Pitch. Yeah, Fever Pitch is kind of more of a romantic comedy. That's when they famously had to reshoot the ending because the Boston Red Sox actually won the World Series at the end of it. Daredew says Space Jam. Yeah, Space Jam is definitely one. Slab says The Blind Side.
That's a good one.
Shaggy says Rounders. Yeah. Chris Batkinson says Warrior. Yep. Daredew says Any Given Sunday. Josh says The Wrestler. Yeah, for sure.
Oh, The Wrestler.
Jets Mets says The Replacements, for sure. That's definitely up there. Zelly says Uncut Gems, aka Anxiety the Movie. Yep, absolutely. Jagged says The Hunt. Yeah, I can see that. And then you have Matthew Long's Draft Day. We have Dodgeball. We have Field of Dreams and Tin Cup. So a lot of these sports movies are really just, you know, they're working out they're exercising the demons of their characters, right? It's almost incidental. So almost all sports movies are like this. They're not usually about the sport necessarily a lot of times, but anyway. Well, all right. Well, that's a show. The next week is going to be Eight Men Out. Happy all of you came by today on Patreon and YouTube to see us live on this Tuesday. Very happy that you guys came out, and the chat looks even livelier than normal. So I'm very happy about that. So, all right. We'll guess we'll see you next week.
Thanks, everybody.
See ya. Bye.
Be a
part of the live show by being a member of the Sin Club at Patreon at patreon.com/cinemasins. Chat with us on the CinemaSins Discord at discord.gg/cinemasins or CinemaSins Twitter at CinemaSins, and email any comments or questions to recotopia@cinemasins.com. That's recotopia@cinemasins.com.
I will no longer be placing wild $1,000 prop bets on Orioles in the postseason, which was my plan until yesterday. Mm-hmm.
That's right. You're going to do some wheeling and dealing.
There's a documentary on Netflix I want to watch with my wife that maybe you'd be interested in, called Inside the Mind of a Cat.
Ah.
And it's basically, like, from what I've been told, like 75 minutes long, and it's got a bunch of experts speculating on what cats are thinking. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, it just sounds up my alley.
yeah
being as you have three cats.
Yeah,
so there you go. There's a small recommend before the show even begins.
There's a lot of times I've had to think in a way like that's completely opposite of human when it comes to cats, because like I sit there and I feel bad when I like have to take them out of a room and close them out of it and all this other type of stuff. And I'm like, they don't think anything personal about this. All they know is that they can't get into that place anymore. That's all they know. They don't know that you did it. They don't know that, you know, there's any personal reason behind it. They just, all they know is, oh, I can't get there anymore. That's probably what they're sitting there thinking. Because there's sometimes where they're sitting there playing, you know, they always take in like live, like a lizard or something into the house, and I have to pick it up so they don't like kill it in there and leave a whole bunch of lizard in there. I pick it up and a lot of times I'm able to save the lizard and I put it out on the side and everything, and they don't sit there and go, oh, why did you take that lizard out? They're actually looking for where the lizard went.
Right.
After you take it. Like, yeah. They don't even think that you took it out. They just like, oh, it's gone.
Like, my cats, my two young ones are hyper alert for any kind of, like, microscopic bug that I can barely see with my naked eye. Mm-hmm. And if I see them in a certain posture together, I know, oh, they found a bug. It's probably a gnat or something. And I'll go over there, I'll get a paper towel, and I'll grab it, kill it, throw it in the trash, and they will stare at that same spot for 30 more minutes.
Yeah.
Like, expecting that fucking bug to show back up. They have no concept of my involvement, like you said, in the situation. They're just like, oh, well, everything's still the same. That was the owner. He's just passing through. But now where's that bug?
And I sometimes think that cats don't think of you as a whole body. They think of you as just a face. So like...
this is why they trip you when they want food or something. Are they like,
yeah, they recognize your face, and they know that everything attached to your face is something that's scary to them, probably. But like, if I lie down, they suddenly, the fear of that whole thing is gone. They're just on top of you, and I don't think they know that they're on top of you. They just know that your face is nearby.
Well, I know I've been wearing these brimless baseball caps for the last couple of years, but I bought a regular baseball cap, an Orioles cap, a month or two ago. And the first time I wore that, both the younger cats were like, who the fuck is that? Mm-hmm. Like, something was obscuring the way my face should register to them. Like if I forget to take my sunglasses off, they'll give me the same kind of look, like, who the fuck are you? And then when my brother was here, we were watching, I think it was Elvis, but whatever, he was sitting in one seat, I was sitting in the other, and my older cat Davis came in and sat on the coffee table and just kept looking at my brother and then looking back at me and then looking back at my brother. I swear he was recognizing something in my brother. But he was also realizing that's not owner. Owner is there, but this looks like owner. It was the funniest thing. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.